Small Gauge Love from South American Archives. Some of the guests that we have here have a special connection with a project that we pursue within MIAP. Many of you know that is the Archival Preservation Exchange Program that has taken us to places such as Ghana, Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, Colombia. Did I say Chile? Yeah, Spain. And if I can get the computer for a second, this is my expression of love for a second for Dan Strivel. Okay, so this year we are going to Brazil. APEX is going to take place between June 1st and June 15th. And this afternoon we have a wonderful program that is going to be opened by our host for APEX 2018, Rafael de Luna Freire, who is an associate professor in the Film and Video Department and the Film and Audiovisual Studies Program at the Federal Fluminense University in Niterói. He has worked at the Film Archive of the Rio de Janeiro Museum of Modern Art, and he is also a founding member and former director of the Brazilian Association of Audiovisual Preservation. He is going to be talking to us about a 9.5 film called Balneario da Urca. And then we are going to have Bea Rodovalo, is Beatriz, who, excuse me, who is a PhD candidate and teaching assistant at Université Sorbonne Nouvelle, Paris 3. And she's also a teaching assistant at the University of Vicence in Saint-Denis. And she is doing research on home movies and non-hegemonic productions. She will be followed by Paola Prestes, who is a Brazilian documentary and a screenwriter. And she is also a PhD candidate at the Media and Audiovisual Processes Department of the School of Communications and Arts in Sao Paulo. And she is also working on home movie. And last but not least is Isabel Weshpore, who is a PhD student at L'École Nationale des Chartes in Paris, with a master's degree in history from the Universidad de la República in Uruguay that hosted us in 2014 for APEX. And she is the coordinator at the Audiovisual Preservation Lab in the same university. I have a lot of respect for how resourceful these people are next to our great colleague, Julio Cabrio, who has been able to repurpose a lot of old equipment into preservation tools. Isabel's main research is in audiovisual heritage in Uruguay at the moment. So I wonder if we are ready with the technology to welcome. Okay, so never mind. I'll send it.
So,
do it this way.
So yeah, that's it. That you can put it to the center. So this is a little token of appreciation for Dan Strivel, and it's a big for Edson Arantes do Nascimento Pelé to Muhammad Ali. It's a token of love of our future connection with Brazil. Thank you so much, Rafael. So Rafael de Luna is next.
Thank you.
good afternoon. Well, I'm very glad to be here. It's my first time at Orphans, and I'm representing the LUPA, our recently created Film Preservation University Lab at the Federal Fluminense University, where I'm a professor in the Film and Video Department. In this presentation, I will introduce LUPA, talking briefly about its creation, its goals and collections, but also about the film we are showing today, a 9.5mm amateur film from around 1933 with the descript assigned a title of Balneário da Urca, which stands for Urca Beach Resort. I have the habit of saying that I had had two parallel careers, one in film archives and another in the university, one as an audiovisual archivist and the other as a film scholar. I say this to highlight the unfortunate divorce that I identify in Brazil between film archives and university, as if film preservation and historical research did not have a fundamental relationship. Thus, one of the objectives of LUPA is to bring the university closer to the field of film preservation and vice versa, such as the work that has been done here with the MIAP program. And I don't mean any university, since Federal Fluminense, or UFI, as we call it, was the pioneer in Latin America in offering since 2000, as part of its bachelor degree on film and audiovisual, a semester-length course on film preservation. Thus, UFI has been playing an important role in the training of film preservation professionals who complement their learning in school institutions around the world and got positioned in different archives, museums, and cultural institutions in Brazil. However, our university, like others in Brazil, does not yet have an structure adequate to the development of film preservation activities, which depends on partnerships with institutions such as the Film Archive of the Museum of Modern Art of Rio de Janeiro, or MAM. Besides its role as an academic lab, LUPA has also the pretension of being a small film archive, actually the first university film archive in Brazil. As a film archive, the focus of LUPA is the amateur cinema produced in the state of Rio de Janeiro, focusing on a type of film that ends up not being prioritized by the main Brazilian film archives, such as the MAM itself or the Cinemateca Brasileira, the Brazilian National Film Archive in São Paulo. Besides the focus on this often orphan kind of film, the geographical scope is also relevant. Until 1960, with the construction of Brasília, Rio de Janeiro was the federal capital, while Niterói, where UFA is located, was the capital of the state of Rio de Janeiro. Therefore, LUPA is perhaps the first public, regional, and thematic film archive in Brazil. Although we are still at the beginning of our work, we still have no vaults and not even inspection tables, LUPA aims to be a concrete case, a living example of the importance of reviewing what I call the film preservation system in Brazil. During the last decade, in the context of the meetings that resulted in the creation of the ABPA, the Brazilian Association of Audiovisual Preservation, a sort of Brazilian AMIA, there was a critical reflection on the federal government's investment in a centralizing model, with resources concentrated in the Cinemateca Brasileira, while city and state governments did not assume their responsibilities. ABPA members constantly debated the risks and difficulties inherent to this model that focuses on a single national film archive. LUPA aims to be an argument in defense of a decentralized model with different regional institutions sharing responsibilities and resources for an effective preservation of a diverse and multiple audiovisual heritage. If LUPA still has no physical home, we already have our virtual headquarters, which is the LUPA website, where we have already given access to part of our collections, which currently cover 9.5, 16, and Super 8 millimeter, in addition to historical projection equipment. Many of our projectors are working, and our intention is to hold film exhibitions with the aim of promoting amateur cinema and nurturing the formation of a more accurate visual culture for our filmmaking students. The first collection of LUPA is the J. Nunes collection, granted by an anonymous donor who had no information on the films. It was a set of 9 cans of Pathé Babe films, which was the most popular gauge in Brazil for amateur filmmakers between the 1920s and 1940s. The collection has actuality films and newsreel, but mainly amateur films shot by J. Nunes, as he signs his name in some of the intertitles. In addition to family scenes in his home movies, J. Nunes filmed some of the most important cultural events and leisure activities in the city of Rio de Janeiro of his time. His films show the Rio Carnival pageant, the traditional popular festivities at the stair of the Our Lady of Penha Church, and even the only surviving moving images of Rio's bullfights that attracted the mass of European immigrants who live in the city. Apparently from a lower middle class white family, Jota Nunes' films reveal rare images of Afro-Brazilian carnival pageants in the early 1930s, which the currently preserved feature films of that time almost never shows. Thanks to the agreement between UFF and MAM, the Jota Nunes collection was digitized at Cinemateca Brasileira in 2017, and those films are now available for free viewing on the Lupa website. Since the theme of The 11th Orphan is love, I chose to project today one of the leisure films of the Jota Nunes collection, which is about going to the beach. That Brazilians, especially those born in Rio, the so-called cariocas, really love beaches is of common knowledge. From the Copacabana of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers flying down to Rio, to the international success of the Bossa Nova song, The Girl from Ipanema, Rio de Janeiro beaches and their beautiful girls wearing bikini became a worldwide known a symbol of Brazilianness from the past until the present. Nothing is more Brazilian than the beaches of Rio. One can read today in Brazil's official tourism website. However, this has not always been the case. The habit of going to the beaches for pleasure and even the love of swimming, sunbathing, and playing sports in the sand is the result of social historical process. As historian Mary Del Priore claims, in Brazil in the 18th century, beaches were dump sites used for garbage disposal. In the 19th century, they were upgraded and exclusively prescribed for medical treatment. Not until the 1920s did beaches become synonymous with off-leisure activity. As anthropologist Julia O'Donnell has demonstrated in her book, The Invention of Copacabana, in the first decades of the 20th century, this formerly deserted neighborhood inhabited by fishermen and their families was gradually redefined as the most elegant area of Rio, popular with a new elite that praised a modern lifestyle marked by physical activities, youth, and open-air leisure. Inspired by other famous seaside resorts such as Miami in the US or Biarritz in France, the material and discursive investments that helped to develop the touristic potential of the neighborhood included the construction of the world-famous Copacabana Palace Hotel in 1923, used as the backdrop setting for flying down to Rio 10 years later. The film we are presenting today shows a typical sunny day on the Urca Beach, location of the famous Sugarloaf Mountain, situated between Copacabana and Botafogo at a time when this culture of the beach was on the rise. Those rare images vividly bring us the crowded sands, the practice of new sports such as volleyball, the bold body exhibitionism of men and women in swimming suits that at times shocked the older generations. We can also marvel extraordinary glimpses of the famous Cassino da Urca, the most important stage for music and film stars in 1930s and 1940s in Brazil, such as Josephine Baker, among many others. It was also where Carmen Miranda was discovered by Lee Schubert, who brought her to Broadway and then to Hollywood stardom. Unlike other Jota Nunes films, in Balneário da Urca, we see exclusively white men and women. This evidences how this culture of beach in Rio de Janeiro was also based on a geography of social exclusion, when the city became increasingly divided between the rich white habitants of the South Zone, which includes Urca, Copacabana, and Ipanema, and the working class population of the far from the coast North Zone. A division that until today caused violent tension when residents from these oceanfront neighborhoods demand action from the government to prevent what they call an invasion of our beaches by poorer black cariocas during summer Sundays. Finally, Balneário da Urca is a good example of how the idea of a modern city and a modern lifestyle changed in Rio de Janeiro. Since the first years of the 20th century, the Central Avenue in Rio's recently remodeled downtown became the most fashionable place of the city. It was there where one could find young women with Hollywood star-inspired short hair and very pale faces thanks to makeup and umbrellas for the protection from the sun. That was where the Carioca flapper went to meet friends, to 5 o'clock tea, to shop at the mall, or to go to the movies. In the late 20s, however, the beaches sidewalks became the favorite spot for wealthy Carioca youth, as pictures, drawings, but also the film we are going to show now eloquently proves. So I'm very glad to show this film in the big screen and the music. So let's see the movie. Thank you.
Our next presenter is Beatriz Rodovalo.
And hello, thank you, Juana, thank you, Dan. So before showing you the films, I would like to show you six frames from six shots from the images. Through these images, I hope to present one possible approach of this collection as they migrate from the private sphere to the public archival sphere. No, it's a preview PDF. Full screen. So they're basically images of nannies. And we can play the film now because they're so brief, so we're going to see them in motion, but I would like just to call your attention to them. And we can play the clip, the film. So, Alberto de Sampaio, born in 1870, was a lawyer from Rio de Janeiro elite and a pioneer of amateur photography in Brazil. His photographic practice, developed mostly between 1888 and 1914, reveals a passionate exploration of aesthetics and aesthetic and technical possibilities. Sampaio even had his own lab. Establishing a dialogue with the professional practice of the time, in 1927, Sampaio acquired a 16mm Bell & Howell camera and pursued his passion for image making in motion. Sampaio's home movie making can be comprehended as a continuity of his photographic practice. Whereas his photographic work has been the subject of an important research, an exhibition, and a publication, his home movies lie rather orphaned at the Cinematheque of the Museum of Modern Art in Rio. For now, they constitute a peripheral aspect of Sampaio's amateur activity. No specific research has been really dedicated to the collection. It was deposited at the MEM in 2010 through Haroldo Marinho Barbosa, a filmmaker who was also the neighbor of the family in Petrópolis. It consists of four 16mm reels, which were digitized for the exhibition. It's the only digitization that exists of these images. So, and his images focus mainly on family life, his grandchildren playing, but also on public events, the landscapes of Rio and Petrópolis, as well as on the rapid urban transformation of the country's then capital. As we can see, Sampaio's camera circulates between the private sphere, the home, mostly embodied by the limits of the family property, and the public sphere, life in the city and in the countryside. Sampaio documents glimpses of a tropical Belle Époque, with its cars and tramways, new railroads, the busy port, the first Zeppelin to cross the Brazilian sky, a plane landing on the sea. So, Sampaio chose modern apparatus, photography, and cinema to document and celebrate symbols of modernity. However, in a society profoundly marked by colonial paradigms and slavery, how do home movies negotiate between the modern and the archaic? This tension appears through the social hierarchies embedded in the films. At the core of this conflict are the brief images of the nannies. We haven't seen them all yet. They reveal what lies outside of the frame of the wealth and the happy, capturing the manifestations of a society of masters and slaves, slaves turned into domestic employees. The images of the nannies disturb the registry of familial happiness because they are traces of the permanence and the perpetuation of violent colonial structures within a society in the process of becoming modern. Nannies are figures who occupy an ambiguous position in the family as well as in the image of the family, a position of both belonging and not belonging. Incorporating images of alterity, home movies become, as Julia Nordegraf and Elvira Powell call them, extended family films. That is, they extend the boundaries of the intimate circle, but also, as Sampaio's films attest to, they extend the limits of the house slash home to document the exterior world. Nevertheless, in the case of Brazilian films and photographs, this extension is not only an extension, but rather a complex amalgamation of the private and the public spheres. In Sampaio's films, this is represented, for example, by the looks of the nannies to the camera, as well as the bodily interactions between the nanny and the children. Nannies confuse the limits of affection and love with those of domestic servitude. They're like family, only they're not. For instance, Adriana Pereira, the historian who developed the work on Sampaio's photographic collection, remarks that in the pictures of children with the nannies, or the black mothers, as they call them, these women were identified only by the words nanny or servant, never by their name or nickname. Images of nannies not only hesitate between belonging and not belonging to the family film, they also question their possibilities of visibility and invisibility. On the one hand, in general, these women stand at the background or at the corners of the frame, which pushes them to invisibility. On the other hand, even when they stand in the center of the frame and become the subject of the image, as the one of the shots I showed you before, they are looked at through the lens of a subject who possesses the power in a rigid social structure, and the power to produce the image, to produce the gaze. So this is the image in question. So thus the collection shows how these issues are at stake for the subject that, in the present, looks at these films again. After all, as Jacques Rancière recalls, In cinema, the light, the frame are also objects of a common sharing. However, they are only conflictually common. We can cut the projection there. So that's it.
Our next presenter is Paola Prestes from the University of Sao Paulo.
Great. Well, good afternoon. Thank you for being here. Where's the PowerPoint? Oh, okay. So today I will introduce to you the collection of films by architect, art history professor, and amateur filmmaker Herbert Duchenez. I'm currently a PhD candidate at the School of Communications and Arts of the University of São Paulo, and this presentation stems from my research on his films. I will share with you a couple of films on dance, which is a way of talking about Duchenez's work, but also of his relationship with his wife, choreographer Maria Duchenez. He helped shape an entire generation of visual artists and other professionals like curators, actors, architects, designers, writers, filmmakers like myself, and of course, quite a few teachers. He had what seemed to be an infinite knowledge and charisma, but what remained his trademark and his most remembered by all who knew him are his films. So here he is. Born in Hamburg in Germany in 1914, Duchenez was an amateur photographer since adolescence. He later studied architecture in Prague, where he became part of a group of young Jewish intellectuals, among them future philosopher Wilhelm Flusser. With the rise of Nazism, he flees to England, and from there he boards a ship to Brazil in 1940. In São Paulo, he meets Maria Rendsburg, a young Hungarian dancer whose family had run away too. In his autobiography, A Manuscript, he describes the 18-year-old laconic beauty performing a dance piece in her parents' home. And I quote him, "So this was Maria's speech, a language she mastered at a level above us, heavy mortals of this earth," end of quote. They were soon married, and the birth of their first child, Ronaldo, or Ronnie, in 1943, triggered an amateur film production that spanned across five decades. So between 1943 and early 90s, Duchenez shot and edited nearly 300 films. Today, 227 of them survive. Shot in black and white and in color, in 8 millimeters and super 8 millimeters, The films have no sound and have an average duration of 20 minutes each, adding up to over 70 hours of edited footage. We can't know how much negative was developed in total. The collection is basically divided in three great areas of interest: travel, family, and dance. These areas are interconnected by way of montage, which means that a family film can very well be a travel film, just as a travel film may be on Korean dance, for instance. Many films have no dates or clear indications, which gets in the way of accurate estimates and the organization of the archive. The listing of the films as cultural heritage is presently underway. So I will talk briefly here about the family films. Dushan starts filming when his first child is born. Ronnie soon becomes a central, rambunctious character depicted throughout the films in all kinds of adventure-type situations. And here, by coincidence, is Ronnie playing with the nanny's daughter. So that's just a relation with Beatrice. The films have two reading layers that bring to mind Patricia Zimmermann when she comments family films in Le Cinéma en Amateur. And she says, I quote, "What the images show is less important than what they don't show," end of quote. In the case, if the first layer is the revelation of a country very different from Duschner's native Germany, the second relates to the historical context that brought him and Maria to Brazil. We can't overlook the fact that when he starts filming, millions of men, women, and children like himself, Maria, and Ronnie are being exterminated in Europe. By filming his beloved wife, his Brazilian-born child, and a life that was nearly taken from him, he reverts the death sentence that only a few years before had befallen him. So the art reporter. The camera is always with Duschen on trips he organizes with his family and friends, but every year he undertakes more adventurous and distant journeys alone. He travels with his camera, but no sound recorder and no tripod. Back home, he edits the films and shows them in informal lectures on art and world culture he gives in his own living room. The gatherings are successful enough to get him an invitation to lecture at the Fundação Armando Alves Penteado School of Arts in the late 60s. This is when the art reporter, as he calls himself, is officially born. So traveling, filming, and teaching constitute the three parts of one long-term educational project. Thus, the films become a fundamental part of his unorthodox teaching method that isn't always understood by his peers, but will leave an indelible mark on his students. So here are some numbers to show the importance that the films on travel acquire, and they have over the other films he makes. And again, we don't have very precise numbers, so these estimates are a little bit maybe off. And we get to the dance films here. From the relationship with Maria starts a vast production of films on dance. More specifically, a few of Maria's unique performances, a great number of films of her dance classes, which she taught at home to students and professional dancers, group presentations in theaters in public and public spaces, mostly students, and performances of professional dancers. We can say that all Duschner's films are love films. Let me see the clip. Where's the clip? Wait a minute. Just a second. Okay, so this is when we play the clip then. Can we play the clip?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. What happened? Didn't play? Can we turn the sound down just a little bit so I can read over? So, we can say that all Duchesne's films are love films. Love for life, love for his family and friends, love for his students, love for the arts, for knowledge, moreover, love for sharing knowledge. However, his greatest love remained Maria. She contracted polio right after Ronnie's birth and could no longer dance. That's when Duchesne turns a loving camera to her and the choreographies she creates for herself with her arms and hands. Unfortunately, there aren't more than three of these performances on film left today. The film Hands, which we see here, is an example of the work Maria would develop, superseding the limitations that the disease had imposed on her. The use of a title in the beginning, Herbert and Maria Present, made in what we could call the Jonas Mika style, indicates that we are viewing something that goes beyond the family chronicle. A type poem in English, probably written by Maria, maybe with Herbert's help, but we can't be sure, opens the film. When they met, he spoke German and she spoke Hungarian, and neither spoke fluent Portuguese. Therefore, they communicated in English. The setting is the couple's home in São Paulo, but this isn't really visible in any of the photograms, because the viewer isn't supposed to know that. Quite differently from the Ronnie films, we aren't looking here at a husband filming a wife in a domestic environment. What we get to witness is one of the rare explicit examples of direct artistic collaboration of the couple with no interference of third parties. Hands is an experimental film in its own right, and in more than one sequence, it evokes Meshes of the Afternoon by Maya Deren, also a dancer and choreographer, among other things, and her then husband, Alexander Hamid. Deren's film opens with a hand holding a flower in a carefully choreographed manner, and in the following sequences, this sensual, feminine hand, just like in the film Hands, is the central piece of expression. In Maria's case, what underlies the delicate but strong evolutions of her hands and gives the images a dramatic dimension is the fact that she could no longer use her entire body to express herself. As I mentioned before, Duchesne's film Maria's students and the professional dancers who came to her to learn the Laban system. When they performed in theaters, not only he filmed the show, but worked as producer, set designer, and did the lighting. As I watched the 51 films on Maria's dance classes and theatrical performances, I noticed that as new characters emerged, their improvisations and body moves influenced the way the camera moved, the framing, the rhythm, and editing choices, as well as the very role of the person behind the camera. There is, of course, no premeditated intermediality, like in Elaine Summers' work, for instance, but a crossing between cinema and dance certainly occurs, even if in spite of Herbert's intentions, who always considered Maria to be the true artist of the pair and regarded himself as the rational, down-to-earth half who made sure she would have the space and protection she needed to create. So unfortunately, because of a matter of time, we have to cut this film and move on to the second one that I hope we can play a little bit more. Can we play the second? Yeah. Okay. So this is the geodesic dome that's part of the Laban system that gives you the three-dimensional space for the dancer to move. So while some films are more bureaucratic than others, in the sense that they have been made for the purpose of registering a teaching method and the debut of a new dance system in Brazil, others are a powerful and lyrical evidence of the talent of artists like Denilto Gomes, here, Jota C. Viola, and Juliana Carneiro da Cunha, today an actor in Ariane Mnouchkine's Théâtre du Soleil in Paris. Formally speaking, these films are perhaps the most daring and creative of the collection, when Duchesne frees himself from the self-imposed need to explain and enlighten others through a logical narrative, as it is often the case in his travel films. We get the chance not only to analyze, but enjoy how movement is captured by the camera and the multiple possibilities in the cinematographic representation of the human body. Here again, we can think of Maya Deren when she makes a study in choreography for camera with Tally Beattie in 1945. But if Deren makes Beattie dissolve spatial and time boundaries with every move of his body and through a complex montage, when Duchesne films Denilto Gomes in the geodesic dome, a similar dissolution occurs not by changing settings or elaborate découpage and editing, but simply by changing the camera's point of view in a disconcerting plongée that doesn't pin the dancer down to the ground, but rather seems to free him from gravity. So in conclusion, I would say that I hope I succeeded in giving you a taste of the Duchesne's collection, and especially of Herbert and Maria's partnership, where the love for their students was expressed through their lifelong commitment to teaching and to a democratic, unconventional approach to knowledge and art. Their legacy will remain uncontested as long as the films exist. I also hope the films will be available to all online in the near future, as I'm sure it would have been their wish. So I'd like to close with the words of Jonas Mikas in Walden Diaries, Notes and Sketches, when he says, "I live, therefore I make films. I make film, therefore I live. Life, movement, I make home movies, therefore I live. I live, therefore I make home movies." Thank you.
Our last presenter is Isabel Shaver Pellegrino from the Universidad General de la República in Uruguay.
Okay, thank you, Juana. Thank you, Dan, and all the organization. Because my English is so poor, we decided to make a previous file, previous video, which explained our presentation in Spanish, but with subtitles for the English person. And I would say too that the film that we are going to see is a silent film, and we decided to not put music because the filmmaker was a scientific filmmaker, and he considers that it's necessary to be silent to see scientific films. You are going to see all the video explanation and the film, the digitalization of our film. Play? Okay.
película que vamos a ver es la tercera digitalización que hizo el Laboratorio de Preservación Audiovisual del Archivo General de la Universidad, de una película que estaba en un archivo que fue hallado en el año 2007 en la Universidad de la República, en un sótano de la Universidad de la República, que estaba contiguo a un departamento donde trabajaban funcionarios que en su momento manifestaron desagrado por los olores tóxicos que emanaban de ese depósito. Cuando las autoridades fueron a inspeccionar, se dieron cuenta de que había un conjunto muy voluminoso de 700 películas que estaban allí, y justamente los olores tóxicos que emanaban provenían del estado de degradación de las películas que se encontraban guardadas o abandonadas en este lugar. Nos dimos cuenta de que en realidad se trataba de todas las películas que había producido entre el año 50 y el año 73 lo que había sido el Instituto de Cinematografía de la Universidad de la República, que fue uno de los primeros institutos de cinematografía que existió en América Latina. Hurgando y hurgando, nos dimos cuenta de que por este instituto habían trasegado importantes nombres de la filmografía nacional. En el año 1973, en Uruguay se produce un golpe de Estado por parte de las Fuerzas Armadas y un conjunto de civiles que ya estaban en el gobierno. Y en ese momento se interviene el Instituto de Cinematografía de la Universidad, justamente buscando películas que podían ser películas producidas por la universidad, que era identificada como un actor político y social que solía tener un discurso confrontativo o contrahegemónico o adverso a todas las manifestaciones del autoritarismo. Esta película que vamos a mostrar hoy, que además de que expresa el amor entre dos escorpiones, nos llega particularmente al trabajo del laboratorio, porque es una película que refería a un autor que prácticamente no estaba nombrado en la bibliografía y en la filmografía del cine uruguayo, que es Plácido Añón. Plácido Añón, que hasta ese momento era prácticamente un desconocido, fue el maestro de muchos de los documentalistas que despuntaron en la cinematografía de los años 60. Si bien él se manifestaba en favor de la imagen objetiva, de la imagen directa, de la imagen sin intervención, vemos en sus imágenes una calidad estética y una capacidad de desarrollo en materia de fotografía y de cine que realmente despuntan frente a toda la producción del Instituto de Cine anterior. Esta particularidad de Añón, poco conocida, fue la que en alguna medida logró transmitirle a sus estudiantes, pero él murió a los 35 años de un cáncer de hígado y en ese contexto su carrera quedó un poco truncada y su obra bastante olvidada. Al encontrarnos con este archivo empezamos a ver estas imágenes de Añón que tenían esta particularidad de poder fusionar el fenómeno de la imagen directa con la capacidad de expresión estética. Bueno, y en ese mismo contexto empezamos a profundizar en su obra y nos encontramos particularmente con esta película. Empezamos a darnos cuenta de que en realidad era una de las primeras veces que en el mundo, a fines de los años 50, se lograba registrar escorpiones en actividad. Porque los escorpiones, además de que son muy pequeñitos, tienen una particularidad que es que muchas veces se mueren en presencia de luz o para justamente preservarse se mantienen quietos y dejan de tener actividad. Añón, para sortear este problema, lo que hizo fue poner a estos escorpiones alrededor de unas cubetas y poner adentro de estas cubetas líquidos que absorbían distintas partes del espectro luminoso, hasta descubrir que la parte del espectro luminoso que afectaba a los escorpiones era la zona azul. En ese contexto, y tras 36 horas de estar con la cámara en un trípode filmando con esta tecnología de aproximación diseñada por él, logró filmar la cópula de los escorpiones, que en realidad es una danza muy particular y muy especial, donde no sabemos si es lo que logra la cámara o es lo que logran los escorpiones, pero el resultado de la película nos da realmente una escena de amor entre los dos animales. tiene una belleza muy particular. Y bueno, en realidad eso se ha transformado un poco en un icono de lo que ha sido nuestro trabajo en el Laboratorio de Preservación Audiovisual, donde rápidamente, con nuestra primera técnica de telecine, buscamos reproducir esta cópula de escorpiones, mejorando un poco la calidad de lo que ya existía en unos VHS que estaban en el archivo. Hicimos un primer telecine del 16 milímetros que teníamos allí. Mejorando la luz de nuestro telecine, hicimos una segunda versión. Y ahora, en el 2016, que hemos logrado desde el Laboratorio de Preservación Audiovisual mejorar significativamente nuestras capacidades de digitalización a raíz de un escáner que fue diseñado por los colegas del laboratorio, en particular en esto quiero poder señalar el aporte de Ignacio Saimanas, de Jaime Vázquez y de Julio Cabrio. A partir de esta nueva tecnología, que es libre en materia de software, en materia de hardware, hemos podido reinterpretar esta película a través de una nueva digitalización, que es la que vamos a ver hoy, que es la que vamos a ver en el marco de esta secuencia, y que en alguna medida nos permite recrear aquella misma vocación de Añón de considerar que la fotografía, el cine y el registro de los fenómenos de la naturaleza constituyen actividades que no se compran, que no se alquilan, que no vienen prefabricadas, sino que requieren de un gran trabajo de dedicación, de amor y de investigación. Esta película simboliza para todos los que pertenecemos al Laboratorio de Preservación Audiovisual del Archivo General de la Universidad, justamente el amor. El amor que le puso Añón a su trabajo, el amor en la naturaleza, que muchas veces es difícil de registrar, el amor a lo bello, y el amor que nosotros le ponemos a intentar recuperar este archivo que por tantas décadas había permanecido descuidado y a un autor que por tanto tiempo fue olvidado de los estudios en el cine.
Thank you so much. Dan, do we have 5 minutes for questions and answers? 15 minutes. Okay, so I will invite Rafael, Paola. I need a little bit more of light. I feel here like blind. We need one more chair. 2, 3, okay. Thank you so much. So, a very diverse presentation, different topics. So I welcome your questions, comments, requests for additional information, suspicions. Yeah. I do have a question for Isabel, because I mentioned in my introduction that I'm always very surprised at all the efforts that your lab makes to repurpose. So do you want to talk a little bit about the last machine that you adapted? Because that digitization is coming from the last machine that you adapted for scanning. Yeah? Okay. Julio, ¿quieres apoyarla? ¿Quieres?
Yes, maybe you can come. Yeah. Because he's part of our...
Yeah, Julio. Julio works with Isabel, and he's a former student of MIAP. So he can tell you a little bit about this process and where that came.
Yes.
I can give you this microphone.
Digitalized this film is a scanner that we made in the laboratory. It's like this. we made this scanner. Julio participated for the staff that was thinking of with Ignacio and Jaime. It was equipments that were from an old laboratory of Telecinema that was in crisis and crash. And they donated the old equipment. We thought in the first time that it was for made telecinemas that from films that in Uruguay we couldn't telecinema before, because we only have equipment to make telecinemas of 60 millimeters. And this could make 35 millimeters. But after that, we research and research, and we transform the equipment. It's like a Frankenstein that made with different parts. And they researched too to make our own softwares to make the process. I don't know if Julio want to say something with a better English than mine.
Hi everyone. What I want to say is like this old equipment was a British old telecine. That's the brand is Ursa Syntel. I'm more in the technical details. And this equipment was abandoned, as Isabel said, and we tried equipment, it was working, so we adapted this equipment that was meant to transfer film to television signal, and we adapted a digital camera to take the photo frames, and after we had to adapt also a Raspberry Pi computer to control the transportation of the film. And after that, we processed the still images with an open source software. And Yeah, that's the way we create the film, like from the still images to the moving image.
Uruguay is a poor country. We didn't have the way to buy an equipment from the important enterprises, and we use our mind. We have the opportunity to be in the university, and we are researchers, and we have a work that permits us to research all the things. This is a benefit, and it's open to all the community to think those things. We are very open.
Thank you, Isabel and Julio. Another question, comment? No? Good, then we can have a longer coffee break. Thank you so much.
Can the next presenters for the next session please join us here just for a tech run through, please?
We think so. I deleted everything we were done with before.
That's a good idea.
Good. I was just going to pull up the next session slides. Hi, Michael.
Hey,
Shahid.
Hi, Shahid.
Nice to meet you.
And thank you so much for your support in the last week.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I felt really guilty that I sent my stuff in so late.
No problem.
I'm Winnie. Nice to meet you. I've been CC'd on all of the emails.
Yes. All right.
I just wanted to give you access to the PowerPoint slides that were on the Google Drive. I don't know if you had uploaded yours.
Uploaded mine yesterday,
okay, so
and sent Dan a quick email.
It probably is not in there.
It's a keynote one, so it's not PowerPoint. It's keynote, and I put it in the root folder.
Okay,
of the Google Drive.
Let me go to the.
Maybe you just need to quit it.
People know.
Wait, oh, got it. I might still let you in. I think that's the right one. Because he just put it. So just
or 2 days ago.
Well, no, this we need to have. We need to have the one. Okay, I'll have our phone. Yeah.
You put yours on the
computer. Yeah, it's in my whatever.
Okay, but I think we just opened an earlier one.
Okay,
so
let's get the right one.
Yeah. So
Michael, I'm going to put your slide on the desktop.
Yeah,
okay.
Do we need to stop the download of the old Ayers Gaken one?
Videos which are running through the keynote.
So then at least we don't have a duplicate and it doesn't slow it down.
So then I'll just go to the desktop and launch it and it'll
Can we test it? Can we launch each one
yeah.
so that
yeah.
nervous
yeah.
people like me will
yeah,
go ahead?
It will probably never be rejected again.
What I'm used to seeing is the play thing.
So if you go to slideshow,
okay.
yeah, and play from start,
okay.
that's one way to do it.
But I don't want
it. Oh, that's okay. That's giving you the percentage
review.
I don't know.
There we go. You're showing that.
Okay.
yeah.
Okay.
Right. And it's a manual thing, right? It's not going to move anything.
Yeah. So it looks like you're, so you can press those arrows for.
Birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so
New York.
That's
so old.
Nice.
There. Oh, okay. I usually don't open it that way. That's good. Okay.
And then it's just clicking like that.
All right. So let me. Think. All right. So that's the up there first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like 2001.
Then. Where did you find that shot? Did you take that?
I don't think I recall seeing that.
Yeah, that's what he's always been.
Yeah.
And the
His video, yeah, there is. Yeah.
I did see them start moving.
Yeah.
So.
Everything seems to be in order until we get up here.
Let's look at that.
The only. Oh yeah, I've got my.
Yeah,
so let's see if I can see my presenter's notes.
Every
and
time.
Then
they
then
did.
We go.
Beautiful.
Yep.
I don't have my presenter's notes,
but I can fix that quickly.
Forget to turn
right,
the
right.
Sound back
oh
to
my God.
Well,
yeah.
So it's not mute.
I forgot it's been such a long time since I did that.
To add presenter's notes?
Yeah, to show my presenter's notes while I play the slideshow. I customized this, presented this.
Oh, presenter notes right there.
Yeah.
I don't understand what's going on. which is exactly what happens.
I'm sure it's going to be helpful for everyone else too.
I love it because it's a long time to
wow.
A piece of paper in my
okay.
Hand.
Oh, that's wonderful. Maybe I'll be converted. Okay. Okay. Wonderful.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And look, I'll just tell the projectionist whenever I need the DCP or the QuickTime movie, I'm just
yep.
Going to announce
yep.
It.
Two files
and then be patient and give him the 5 seconds. Cool.
So the rundown says they can play trailer. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It would change it, but the fewer changes, the better at this point. Mm. So it's a good way to get people in their seat.
So, you want to set up the trailer now?
No, they got it. It's no need to. But Barbara's going first.
I gave it a different title. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, are you testing?
No.
Test?
I think
it's good.
I think it's good.
So as long as the first thing on screen should be Barbara's first slide.
That would be awesome.
So PowerPoint, you close your presentation today.
Yeah, I should just close that and line up here.
To start a presentation on PowerPoint.
Somewhere down here. They keep changing
well, it's
every
a slide design. Slideshow play from start.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll start from black.
Yeah.
Black
okay. The default,
awesome.
Projection's default is to throw up the poster.
The poster.
Walk-in
yeah.
Image whenever we don't have anything on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Alrighty, I think we're
good
to go.
Okay.
Good.
So I'll introduce you just to remind them we're going to do a 7-day thing with him. It's not part of the panel necessarily.
Awesome. And sometime over the next day, so I'm just going to show you that Nazi porn that I'm watching.
Okay.
Because
it's my like, why
don't you want
to show it in the lunchroom and let people gather around the computer if
they
don't
see it.
Sure.
And you know, I'm put the thing is, my wife's a piece of
thanks.